Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to Elevating the Sparks, exploring the spiritual world of Hasidus. It's nice to be back. It's been a while, bit of a hiatus. So I want to refocus where we were, and we're going to meet another Hasidic master this evening. I hope you're excited. I think that's very exciting. And I'm looking forward to working together to try to delve into these deep teachings, which I think can be very helpful for inspiring our lives, our connection to God in today's day and age. So I'm actually, let's sort of regroup what we've already talked about. We started by talking about the Baal Shem Tov. And let me sort of put it in a certain context. I had the chance to read a great book recently by a woman named Dr. Rachel Elior. And she makes the point that the beginning of the Hasidic movement was not in a vacuum, didn't come from nowhere. As we discussed, there were certain social elements, political realities that existed at the time. The Jews were going through a very difficult time. They were sort of abandoned, depressed, and many of them didn't have the education to connect to learning and traditional prayer service in the normal ways. It was sort of an elitist society in that way. But she notes that also they're already beginning in the 13th century, and for centuries afterward, there was a strong movement of mysticism, the study of Kabbalah in the Jewish community, and specifically in the 16th century with the Ari HaKadosh, Rabbi Yitzhak Luria, and his students, some of whom are very well known, like the Beit Yosef, Maran Yosef Karo, who also wrote the Shulchan Aruch, Moshe Cordovero, the Ramak. There were certain elitists or pious societies of people who were very much steeped in mysticism and Kabbalah in this worldview, which we'll talk about in a bit. So that already existed. What the Baal Shem Tov did was to essentially take these Kabbalistic ideas, and instead of relegating them to a select few pious individuals who studied them, he channeled them and made them accessible to a much wider audience. And he communicated them in a very particular way, in a way which we argued in the first chance we had to learn together, which essentially argue that any person at any time, no matter what they're doing, no matter where they are, is in close proximity to God, can connect to Hashem in a very deep and meaningful way. That's the main idea. And the way that he sort of went about advocating that idea through his various discourses really reshaped the way the Jewish community functioned in terms of who was considered a leader, in terms of the modes of service. So what I want to do today is to talk a little bit about the next step, how Hasidut spread. A few of the Baal Shem Tov's first students, and today specifically we're going to focus on one of them, a very important one. His name was Rabbi Yaakov Yosef Polonoye. I might have mispronounced the word Polonoye, but we'll get to that in a minute. And he was very important, mostly because he was essentially the scribe for the Baal Shem Tov's ideas. But Baal Shem Tov, Rabbi Yisrael ben Elazar, did not write any works, or at least formal works. We might have a few of his letters, which we've studied, but he did not write any Sfarim. He did not write any commentaries on the Torah. It was all sort of verbal and oral transmission. And the first one to write down any of his thought, the first person to publish a Hasidic work, doesn't mean that they didn't, that there weren't already Hasidic ideas percolating until this point. But the first Hasidic master to publish the thought of the Baal Shem Tov was Rabbi Yaakov Yosef Polonia. So I'd like to learn a little bit about this Hasidic leader and to share a few ideas with you from his works tonight. And at this point, I'm going to share my PowerPoint presentation with you. Let's see, here we go. Hopefully you'll be able to see it. And we begin. So to give you a bit of an idea, and I know it's still loading, of how this works, I have a very basic diagram here for you, right? We start at the type of Yisrael Baal Shem Tov. We learned a little bit about him. He was the founder, if you will, of Hasidut. And that is not to say he was the only member of the sect at his time. He had some contemporaries that were not quite disciples. They were more like contemporaries, like Pinchas of Karetz was one of them. There were others, but he was essentially the grandmaster, the founder. And he had two primary disciples. And they were Rabbi Yaakov Yosef Polonia, who we're going to learn about today, and Rav Dov Ber of Mezrich, otherwise known as the Maggid of Mezrich. Now, like any other movement, this wasn't simple. When the Baal Shem Tov died, it wasn't 100% clear whom his successor would be. He had a son that took over for about a year and then essentially gave up the mantle of leader of the Hasidim. And there were two disciples. What essentially happened was Rav Dov Ber of Mezrich, who maybe we'll get a chance to learn about the next time we meet, he became the one who really spurred the growth of the movement. He had many disciples. He also moved the center of Hasidut from Mezhebuz, where the Baal Shem Tov was, to Mezrich, which was in another part of Ukraine. I could show you it on the map if you'd like. So he had all these other huge grandmasters of Hasidim who were his students. And then they all had their own sects of Hasidim. So maybe you've heard of Rav Levi Yitzchak of Barditcha. He had his Hasidim. There was the Karlina Rebbe, Rav Aaron of Karlin, and he had his Hasidus. And then there's Elimelech of Lezhansk, who had his Hasidus. Of course, the first Rebbe of Chabad, Shner Zamna Leidi, the Baal HaTanya, he had his Hasidus. These are a few of the many what are called the Chevra Kadisha, the holy group of students of Rav Dov Ber of Mezrich, who was the disciple of the Baal Shem Tov, and through him, Hasidus began to spread from that area of Ukraine throughout Europe to Belarus, Russia, Poland, even to Lithuania, etc. So that was Rav Dov Ber of Mezrich. And essentially, his role was the leader of the movement and the one who had all the disciples and helped it to spread. Rav Yaakov Yosef, however, did not have as many disciples, and he was less involved in going out and recruiting, or even having, you know, students that he taught to on a regular basis. His main avoda was writing. And writing down the work of the Baal Shem Tov. And it is because of his efforts that we have much of the thought of the Baal Shem Tov that we do have. So a bit about his life. I'm just going to actually pause here. Does anybody want to see sort of like a map of how this spread? Does that interest you? I played a bit around a bit with Google Maps. Charles is raising his hand. Anybody else? They want to nix that? Okay, so what I'm going to do now, I'm going to stop my share of the PowerPoint presentation. This isn't anything, you know, scholarly, but let me share my screen with you again. Here, 1 second. And yeah, here it is. So this is a little bit of a map. This is just Google Maps and me playing around a little bit. But that didn't work the way I wanted. If we zoom in here, so if you can see this, where the cursor is right now is, I guess, based on current spelling, Mezrich, and this is Mezhebuz. Mezhebuz was where the Baal Shem Tov That was where he operated. Mezrich was the Magid of Mezrich, his student, Rav Dover of Mezrich. That's another part of Ukraine. And he had many students. If you zoom out here, so you see how far the movement began to spread. You know, you have over here, Pinsk is near Barditsha, where Levi Yitzchak was, also Shmuel Shmelka of Nikolsburg was near Minsk. You had Liadi, which was where the Balatanya was, closer to Russia. You had Lezhansk, which was closer to Poland, where Veli Melech was. So you see how it began to spread throughout Eastern Europe and beyond. You had some in Moldova, actually. You had in Hungary. It really exploded, both in terms of the amount of people and also geographically. So that's a brief description or a geographical description of what was happening. Okay. So now let's learn a little bit about Rav Yaakov Yosef of Polonia. Here we go. Okay. What do we know about him? From what I understand, we don't know too much about his early life, but it is worth noting the following. He was from a rabbinic family, and before he became a disciple of the Baal Shem Tov, he was already a rabbi and already very much steeped in mysticism. And I actually want to take a minute here to sort of dispel a certain notion that I've heard. I'm wondering if you've heard this. Let me know if you have. That there is a notion out there that the Hasidic rat masters were not traditional Torah scholars. Right? You have this notion out there that they were sort of into mysticism. They were like medicine men. They knew how to give you a good drasha, but maybe they didn't know, you know, Gemara. They couldn't, didn't know poskim or halacha. They couldn't pass the shiloh for you. And for the vast majority of the Hasidic rebbes, that's totally not true. It couldn't be farther from the truth. And Rav Yaakov Yosef of Polonia is a classic example. Again, the primary disciple of the Baal Shem Tov in terms of writing his Torah, his work is really hard to read because he just quotes from everything. He's quoting, obviously, Psukim, but Midrashim and Gemaras and the Chovos HaLevavos and Jewish thought and the Rambam and the Mefarshim on the Rambam. And he's quoting from everywhere all the time. And he's sort of, it's hard to know exactly where he's going. The point is, he was from a rabbinic family. He was already a rabbi before he became a student of the Baal Shem Tov. And he was already a mystic. And the sort of mysticism, Kabbalah, I guess you could say proto-Hasidus, that was practiced from the Ari HaKadosh, was that of an ascetic lifestyle. The Ari HaKadosh advocated for complete spirituality, and we'll get to some of the concepts later, but the way to do that was essentially to abstain from the physical world, to find a God in everything. Meant abstaining. It meant sort of being apart from people. It meant not really being part of the community. And as a rabbi, it's not always the way to go. People don't like to be withdrawn from when they're paying your salary. I don't plan on becoming a hermit at any point, in case any of you were worried. And so he was evicted from his community in the Podolia region of Ukraine. He was evicted. He was kicked out. They fired him on Shabbos, it is said. And that was obviously a very difficult thing for him. And so he begins wandering, you know, he's sort of homeless. And this is when he meets the Baal Shem Tov. And the Baal Shem Tov's version of mysticism did not advocate for asceticism. He did not believe in abstaining from physicality. The Baal Shem Tov, as we'll see, believed that everything we do, eating, drinking, etc., can all be uplifted. There's holiness in everything, and that's what we need to find. And so he sort of had a Rav Yaakov Yosef of Polonia, once he met the Baal Shem Tov, had a total change in the way he lived and the way he approached things. And then he served as a rabbi in many Hasidic communities. And I listed some of you from here until he gets to Polonia, where he's a Hasidic rabbi until he dies. Let me just say, in terms of time, the Baal Shem Tov was born in 1696, according to our records. Hasidus and the Baal Shem Tov's revelation takes place in the middle of the 18th century, which is essentially when Rav Yaakov Yosef meets the Baal Shem Tov, and he publishes his first work, which is called Toldos Yaakov Yosef. The first Hasidic work ever published with a printing press, that's published in 1780. So this isn't the beginning of Hasidus, but it's the first ideas ever written down. Now, let me tell you, it is not an easy book to read at all. It's really hard to decipher. He just goes on, he quotes one thing and he says, and this means, and this leads me to this, and this leads me to that, and this explains this, and this explains that. He's jumping all over the place from one part of the Chumash to another Gemara, to a Rambam. And I struggled to find something that I could present to you, which I felt confident enough that I understood and that we could all gain from together. But I did find a few pieces that I want to share with you. And I think they're reflective of some of the most important ideas of Hasidus that the Baal Shem Tov really intended to spread. So I want to start, before we get into this text, this is from the Tolos Yaakov, Yaakov Yosef Anasso. I want to take a step back and really delve into territory that I'm not quite qualified to discuss, but I think it's important to have a very basic understanding of. And that is the name of this series. The name of this series is Elevating the Sparks. Elevating the Sparks. Anybody have any idea what that might be referring to? Elevating the Sparks? Which sparks? Why they need to be elevated? So it's a really mystical idea. It's a very esoteric idea. And I can't say I fully understand it. And I don't think anyone can unless they really have an appropriate Kabbalistic background and teacher. But it is an idea that lies at the heart of Hasidus and Kabbalah. And I think we need to at least have a basic understanding of the outcome. And that is the idea of Sfirat HaKelim, or the shattering of the vessels. And the way I understand that is that Hashem is Ein Sof. Ein Sof means he's infinite and all-encompassing. And he should encompass everything. There should have been no room for everything else, anything else. And that infinite, all-encompassing God wanted to create a world which is limited and finite. And that had to happen through channeling his complete oneness, complete unity, meaning we describe God, God is totally one. And that when we use certain attributes to describe him, those are tools for us to get a sense of God. But in his essence, God is totally one. And the way that creation works is that the sort of the attributes of God, if you can sort of imagine like this oneness at the top, sort of channeled downward slowly through various intermediate worlds, which end up creating this finite world, the lowest world, right? That there are these upper worlds of spirituality separating as an interface between God and the world. And Sfiras HaKelim means that somehow in that process, these spiritual attributes of God, these forces that were all, which are all infinite, but had to interact in some way, could not be contained. They could not be contained. And the process of creation, this is the Arizal's take on the idea. Chazal mentioned the Medrash that before the world was created, God destroyed many other worlds. What that means for the Arizal is that there was this explosion, as it were, of divinity. That the mitos, the attributes of God, the spheros, these emanations, because they were all encompassing, didn't mix together well. And the utensils, quote unquote, that contained them broke. And therefore, here's the gist of it. There's sparks of divinity that were scattered throughout the world. What exactly that means, I can't really tell you. But what it means on a simple level is, on a basic level, is that the creation of the world meant that in a certain sense, God's unity, God's oneness was impacted and it was scattered. And so one of the goals of the Arizal and his followers is to elevate the sparks, to be mala the nitzotzos, to find these sparks of divinity scattered throughout creation, and to reunite them with God. And so And as I mentioned, Dr. Rachel Lior explains in her book, I don't remember the title offhand, but if you're interested, I could send it to you. It's a dense book. It's not light reading, I'll warn you. That is an incredibly radical idea for the following reason. It turns our relationship with God almost upside down, right? Rather than God being the Redeemer and the Jews being in exile, which is also obviously true, but that physical or political reality of exile is reflective of a deeper spiritual reality in exile, whereby there are these divine sparks, that the divine presence is, in a sense, in exile. It has been disunified, as it were, and we are the redeemers of the divine presence. When we do mitzvot, and we'll see in just a moment, anything with the right intentions, we can reunite elements of this divinity with the divine presence, and as it quote unquote redeem, cause a redemption or unification of the Shekhinah. So that's a lot to sort of swallow, but here's the gist of it, what I want to focus on. That, why is that an important idea? Okay, it sounds very heebie-jeebie, Rabbi. What's the point of that? Well, why are you telling me that? And you don't even understand it anyway, right? Like, are you kidding? The point is that if you are a non-well-educated, simple Jew who's poor and can barely make a living and doesn't have that much time to learn, you have a very important mission all of a sudden, as the Baal Shem Tov would say it. You can do something incredible. With every mitzvah you can do, you can elevate the sparks. You can reunite an element of God's Shekhinah. And maybe you're familiar with the notion of reuniting Kutcha Brichu Shchunte. You can, quote unquote, kivayachol, redeem God, in a sense, because God's divinity is literally everywhere. It's in everything. If you approach any object or any activity in the right way, you can unlock the divine sparks in that activity and send them back to God, which causes this unification and brings down the divine influence into the world and brings the world one step closer to redemption. Because the ultimate redemption takes place not just when we return to the land of Israel, but also when God's unity is totally complete. And that's what the Toldos Yaakov Yosef says here. He says, you can read it in front of you. Melo kol ha'aretz kivodo. The whole world is filled with his glory. Ve'ein davar gadol o katan nifrad mimenu. There is no small or great thing separate from him. Ki yu ha'matzoi b'chol metzio kulan. He is the being behind all existence. He is present in all things that exist. He's everywhere in everything at all times. God is there. He's imminent. Therefore, a complete person can cause great unifications. And the unification refers to this theory I just shared with you about the sparks of divinity that are scattered throughout this universe in everything. A person can cause these unifications, a few b'masav agashmiyim, even with their physical activity. Hein ma'achalo u'mishcheh, whether eating and drinking, mishkal or intercourse, u'masa u'matan, or their business transactions, or their physical matters that take place between them and their fellow. This is what it means to say, you shall know him in all of your ways. And now we get to something that, if you're familiar with Hasidus in any way, you're probably familiar with, and that is the creative approach to language. Anyone here heard of like a Hasidic pshat? Hasidic explanation of something? You're chuckling, Charlie. What would a Hasidish explanation be of something? Would you say?
I'm not chuckling. I want to hear what you have to say.
Well, I'll tell you. But anyone want to give a guess? What would a, like, you know, if let's say you're you hear someone give Dvar Torah, and then the response is, well, that was very Hasidish. What does that mean? Usually.
Means it's not liberal. It's taking a lot of liberties with interpretations.
Ah, there you go. Fine. Yeah, it's asserting spiritualization of language.
It's more heart and less head, Rabbi.
Exactly. Well, less head. I'm not sure about that, Stephen. Stephen said it's more heart and less head. I don't know about less head, although it would seem there's a lot of flexibility, but it's definitely a lot literal. And it certainly stretches the boundaries. It might require a lot of help to follow what it means. Sorry? It might require a lot of head. So it's not simple, but they are very, you could say, liberal in the way they use or approach language, that a specific term might represent something far beyond its literal translation. And this is because of the following. It's not just arbitrary. It's because the Hasidus is founded on the belief that our physical reality is in sync with a more important spiritual reality. There's a spiritual world that exists that we all need to connect to, tap into. And that therefore, the Torah, which is the word of God, and the Hasidim take that very, very seriously, that the words in the Torah are the word of God. And therefore, the physical associations with the Torah are also, not only, but also a lavush, a dressing for a more important, essential, spiritual concept that they are relaying. And therefore, Hasidim are very creative, we'll say, when they read things. Now, this particular translation isn't so crazy, but I think you'll get a taste. He says, so he's been talking about how you can do these incredible things no matter what you're doing. There's spirituality in everything, every single action. That's a radical idea, by the way. I want you to appreciate that. And that is a primary feature of Hasidus, although there's sort of a range. Not all Hasidic masters thought the same thing, and there's a lot of variety, and they weren't all the same in any manner. But there is a big theme of what we call avodah shebegashmius, the service of God, which takes place through physicality. You can serve God through eating and drinking, and all the basic things people do, which again elevates the spiritual life of your typical Jew. Now that's very radical, and maybe we'll have a chance in a few weeks to discuss how some people found that very offensive. Well, what do you mean? You're going to tell people they don't have to learn, they don't have to daven, they don't have to become talmidei chachamim, they don't need to go to yeshiva, they can serve God just by mowing their lawn? What kind of ridiculousness is that? Right? So he's pointing to this following pasuk. It says, "B'chol drachecha da'ehu, you shall know him in all your ways." Now, those of you who learned a little bit of the Rambam with me with the Maimonides series know this is a very important pasuk to the Rambam. Also, what does "B'chol drachecha da'ehu" mean for the Rambam? Or what would you say? Know God in all your ways. In what sense do we know him in all our ways? Probably heard this one before. What does know God in all your ways mean? What do we have to do?
But that when you conduct your life, like think about God, you know, the connections to God and that God, you know, you're really that it's about God and your connection to God. Beautiful. And how you're sort of elevating things.
Beautiful. Elevating. Okay, right. We got in the language of elevating. That's good. But by on a simple level, it means do things l'shem shamayim. It means the Rambam says all your actions should be directed toward knowledge of God. Not that you know God through eating, but listen, we're human and we need to eat, we need to drink, we need to sleep. And if you do those things with the right intentions, then everything becomes a mitzvah. And this isn't so far from that, but this is a far more radical idea. Because the ehu there means know him in the sense that keep him in mind, or it should be geared toward helping you know him. But that's not how the Toldos Yaakov Yosef explains this. He says, Kimo, the ehu, Vayeda Adam and Chava. Adam had known Chava to Yichud Viziva. No means there in that context, Adam had known Chava. It means he had been intimate with Chava. He had connected to Chava in an intimate way, which means to say you should connect to God, bind yourself to God, cleave to God in an intimate way with everything that you do. Literally cause yourself to unite with him, to cleave to him. And that's the Yehudim idea, to cause this unification. And if that's the case with physical matters, certainly it's the case with prayer. He's quoting brachos. You see, he knew it all. The Gemara brachos says, davening are matters that stand the height of the world. What do you mean they stand at the height of the world? That prayer stands at the height of the world. That means sheish kama v'kama madrigos. There are many levels to tefillah. U'v'chol v'echad v'echad. Wherever a person is, at their level, yachol adam liyachin midos hel yonos. They can unify the upper midos, attributes, God's divine attributes. And I don't fully understand this. I'm going to confess to you. But the idea of that with doing mitzvahs, you have in mind to unite all of God's attributes of chesed and rachamim, mercy and kindness and strength, etc., that those express themselves as separate, but really they're one. And you want to unify everything. And that's what your intention is. And no matter what level you're on, you can intend to cause this great unification. Besod, besod, and this is another creative interpretation. This aligns with the secret understanding of the pasuk, which says "Vizot yavo Aaron Hakodesh." Vizot means with this, Aaron will enter the Mishkan. Aaron will enter the holy. This describes when Aaron entered the Mishkan on Yom Kippurim, and Vizot literally means with these karbanos. But how does the Toldos Yaakov Yosef interpret that pasuk? Vizot means min ota madrega sha adam husham. With this means wherever you are, at whatever level you find yourself, yichlo atzmo im klaluta olam shehim madrego de eglu. You should combine, intend to unite yourself with the rest of the world on their level. Shekulam heim evarei Knesset Yisrael. They are all the limbs of Knesset Yisrael. Umisham yitpalel. And from that place of combining yourself with the rest of Israel, there you should daven, and then you can go into the Kodesh. Then you can enter the holy, because the Mishkan is not just a historical building that existed thousands of years ago, but the Kodesh is a realm we can all enter into if we approach prayer appropriately. And from that place, wherever you are, from that place of intending to unite with all of Israel, then you can ascend to that holy place. V'Hashem Elokavimo V'Al, created the quote from the end of the beginning of Ezra, then God will be with you and you will ascend. So that is a radical approach to everything, that God is in everything. And let me ask you this. What do you think he means that all the other people are the limbs of Knesset Yisrael? The limbs that the Jewish people, or the bride of Israel, you can even say, has limbs. What does that mean? We're all the limbs of Israel.
We're all connected.
All connected, exactly. Which is the next thing I want to get to, although I don't think I'm going to have to fully finish, but that's okay. The next thing I want to get to, which is that another big idea in Hasidus is the notion that we're all connected. on a very deep spiritual level, because God is everywhere and all encompassing, and we are all, you know, also have godliness to us. We have a chilek elokam yimal. We are all interconnected. And if we choose to do so, if we choose to bind ourselves to one another, then whatever we do is amplified. And that idea is another idea discussed by the Tolos Yaakov Yosef based on the following pasuk. I'm going to actually guess you. I want you to put on your Hasidic hat here, okay? So we're going to read this pasuk, and you tell me what you think he means. So, Daber L'Aron, this is from Bahalodcha. We read it 2 weeks ago, or last week. Yeah, we read it last week here in America. And it says, God says, Moshe, speak to Aaron, and he will say to him, Bahalodcha Saneros, when you literally translated, raise the candles or cause the flame of the candles to ascend, El Mol Panea Menorah Yushavatzaneros, you should direct the light of the candles toward the face or the middle of the menorah. So you have a menorah. The menorah has seven branches, three on one side, three on the other. There's one from the body of the menorah in the middle. And as Rashi explains, you have to direct the wicks of those candles toward the middle candle. So put on your Hasidic hat for me, okay? And you tell me on a deeper spiritual level, because of course this represents this physical commandment of how to light the menorah. But on a deeper level, what is the menorah? What is the face of the menorah? What are the candles that face the middle of the menorah? Give me a nice Hasidic and Josh. This is going to be brave. What do you think?
That's elevating the sparks.
Okay.
Going to one point.
What are the branches of the menorah represent? Or who do they represent? Give me a guess. Who do they represent?
The people of Israel.
There you go. Wasn't so difficult, right? So here we go. It's actually, what's beautiful about this, the Tolos Yaakov Yosef is going to say, this represents a number of different ideas, which are all actually connected. So here he goes. Another really important, excuse me, and you see I have in the heading of the slide, interconnecting this in the power of the tzaddik. Another, again, controversial but really important idea in Hasidus is the power of the tzaddik. Now, that meant in a social level, a total realignment of who was a leader and who was a tzaddik. And you had new leaders with new followings. But it also totally, you know, amplified how important it was for the tzaddik. The tzaddik is like a conduit of spiritual energy. And for the, there is sort of a hierarchy that they're what he often calls is anshei tzura, I guess people of the soul versus, you know, the anshei chomer, people of physicality, whereby there's the tzaddik who is this conduit of spiritual energy who through his piety and contemplation and you know, learning and davening and connection with God is totally connected with God. And then there's the people who bind themselves to the tzaddik and connect to God through him. Now you might say that doesn't sound like a very Jewish idea. I will tell you that there is a pasuk which says, Uvo tidbak. That's a pasuk in the Torah. You shall cleave to God. And there is a chazal. And chazal say, how do you cleave to God? How can you cleave to God? He's Esh Ochla. He's a consuming fire. Rather, he dabek betalmidei chachamim. He dabek betchachamim betalmideihem. Cleave to the sages and their students. Somehow, by cleaving to the sages and their students, we also cleave to God. Now, you could try to rationalize that and say it just means learning from their example, etc., listening to their shiurim. Okay. The Hasidim, the Baal Shem Tov, his students, took that in a more literal way. And that brings us to our novel interpretation of this pasuk we just read earlier. He says, "Vizesh Shenemar." This is in the middle of the piece, by the way. Again, he has very long pieces, discourses on each parsha. But here's a snippet: "Vizesh Shenemar b'ha'aloscha esenirus." This is what it means: "B'ha'aloscha," when you raise up the candles. "B'ha'aloscha," when you raise up the candles. What does that mean? "Ayidei aloscha," through your raising yourself up. "Bidvei could come more," through your connection. This is Aaron. Aaron's the tzaddik. Aaron's the Kohen Gadol. Through Aaron raising himself up. "Of Efshar lahalos haneros," he can also raise the other candles. "Shar klolos avivare Yisrael," the other limbs of Israel. "Hanikraya neros," which are referred to as candles. And he goes through a bunch of chazals. "Ner lokim nishmat aron," a person's soul is like a candle. A person's soul expresses its light through actions. "Ner is gematria 250. There are 248 limbs in a person, plus their ruach and their nefesh. Okay, so each person is a candle. You can by raising yourself, Aaron, you can raise the candles with you. "Ayidei shenichlalu becha," because they become bound with you, "mitrachtas Yisrael," to the unity of Israel. Since we are all connected, we are all part of the same body, spiritual organism, that tzaddik, who is also unifies the people, who is united with the people, when he lifts himself up and connects to God, he raises up the other candles with the Amar, therefore it says, "El mol panam menor yushavas and eros," that you should direct the light of the other candles toward the middle. "Ratzalomar sharosh hador hamechavi mahalosa nikra pnei menorah." Who is the pnei menorah? Who is the face of the menorah? That's the head of the generation. That's the tzaddik. That's Aharon HaKohen. And you have to make sure the candles look toward the middle. "Kemo pnei hador," like the face of the generation. "Ukeshe'echa mistakel b'panem me'iros al-chaviro," when each person looks with an illuminated face toward their friend, when we're united, we have achdus, we have unity. "Ayadeis achdusam miskalusan zem zeh," through their binding with one another, "rosh hadorim daro imo," the head of the generation with his generation with him, "uvenei daro rosh hador," and the people of the generation with the head of the generation, and them all with each other, then through that connection, they all ascend together. That through taking the candles on the right and on the left and directing them toward the tzaddik, everybody is ma'ala. They elevate themselves. And he gives three different explanations. Let's see if we get through all that. V'yisparish begim upon it. This can be explained in three ways. We're not going to, so maybe I'll say them outside. Kulon ke'achan and shachan zem, then they're all connected to another. It also refers to each individual specific person. The soul and the spirit are in the heart and the liver. Interesting. And the neshama, there's a nefesh, a ruach, and a neshama, three different parts to a person's soul. And the neshama, which is the highest part, is rest in a person's brain. If a person perfects their actions, then they extend the soul to really dwell in the brain. If a person perfects their actions, they will cause the light of the soul to illuminate their brain, and that spiritual influence will channel toward the rest of their body as long as their actions are directed toward the neshama. So it's true on an individual level, on an organic level, for each person this is true. And it's true with the generation. I don't even read the whole thing, and it's essentially, it's the same idea that the tzaddik and the rosh hador is in the middle, and all the people of the generation direct themselves toward the middle, and then they're all united and raised through their unity. And finally, he says, va'od perish gimel, on a cosmic, global level. This refers to unity of the world, above and below. Through a person's perfection, all of our perfection, of our actions in this lower world. We increase the illumination in the upper worlds. In the secret of give strength to God, that we can increase the potency, as it were, of God's divine presence if we direct our actions toward the middle. Shehi pnei menorah, because it's the Shechina, that's the face of the menorah. Hamekabel ha'ara milamal, which accepts the light from above. Lashpia adam nikra ner, to then influence the person who's called there. And this is all connected. So the idea that made the primary idea of Rav Yaakov Yosef of Pomaya is sharing here is that the interconnectivity of everything, there's a spiritual reality and divinity that in everything, in every aspect of creation, in every action that you do, and it binds all of us. And if we are unified and we direct our actions toward that center, be it our neshama, be it the head, the tzaddik in every generation, be it towards God, Shechina itself, then we are uniting all the worlds. We're elevating the sparks of divinity throughout creation, and we are bringing about not just a redemption of ourselves, but a redemption of the world, and in a sense, a redemption of divine presence itself. And you can imagine how inspiring that is to your average Jew in Eastern Europe, who is looking to live a meaningful life under very difficult conditions. I hope that you find it inspiring too. Thank you very much for learning with me this evening. And I'm looking forward to learning with you next Monday evening as well, please God. Be well, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks, Linda. Be well.